We're chopping up corn cobs to start off Central Standard this morning. I'm Gina Kaufman, and today we're going to talk about all the delicious produce that's just about ready to harvest and eat, starting with corn. Our buddies at Harvest Public Media tell us that the vast majority of corn grown in the Midwest goes to feed animals or to make ethanol. But what about that tiny percentage that winds up on your grill? Our food critics and a chef will give us some pointers on the best ways to enjoy corn at the table. But first, Peter Scarf is a professor of plant sciences at the University of Missouri, and he's going to take us to the cornfields. Hi, Peter.
Hello.
Has Missouri's large-scale corn harvest already begun?
There have probably been a few fields done in the far southern parts of the state.
Yeah, but not most the people most are, of it.
Most people are still weeks or months away.
Weeks or months?
And that's for the field corn. Now, when you're talking about what someone's going to put on the grill, you can certainly grill field corn if you got an ear at the right stage. And they used to call those roasting ears. Not very many people do that anymore. So sweet corn is a much shorter harvest season, although the people who grow it try to really spread out their planting so that they have really fresh peak corn for as long as possible.
So let's get into some of these distinctions. Most of what's grown in the Midwest ends up somewhere else other than on a plate, right?
That's true. Although if you look at it kind of indirectly, eating a pork chop, a lot of that was fueled by corn eaten by that pig. So it ends up on your plate in a certain form that's no longer corn.
Good point. Well, what is the difference between the corn that's grown for livestock feed or ethanol and the corn that's grown for human consumption? Is there a difference?
If you're eating corn on the cob, which is what most people are going to think of when they talk about eating corn, the difference is that there's a genetic mutation in sweet corn that prevents the sugars from turning into starch at the normal rate. And that means sugars build up. It tastes sweet. We like that. And so we're a lot happier with an ear of sweet corn on our plate than an ear of field corn.
Yeah. What about popcorn?
Popcorn is a variant that's very hard-shelled. It's like the Native American dominant form when Europeans arrived in North America. Had a very hard shell, and the result of the hard shell is if you heat it up, the water inside gets to a very high pressure before the shell finally bursts, and then it's a very violent explosion, and that's what we think of when we pop the corn. And field corn won't do that because the water that's inside will just gradually leak out through the seed coat without building up so much pressure that it's going to explode. So it's really field corn. The most like the field corn that Native Americans were eating when Europeans arrived. But since then, we've bred field corn to be quite different.
To be softer?
Softer, easier to eat for humans, easier to eat for animals, easier to mill and make cornbread from. And then we also have found these other genetic mutations that make it sweet. And then it's really nice to eat an ear of that with some butter on it.
Yeah, I agree with that. You kind of hinted at this, but what is the history behind the cultivation of corn in the Americas?
Well, I think it's several thousand years old at least. I'm not real familiar with it, but I think that southern Mexico is the genetic center of origin of the corn plant. And the old name for what they first started cultivating is teosinte. And it had very small ears, usually on top of the plant. Corn ears now, for anyone who's ever picked one and shucked it, are on the side of the plant. And that was a genetic change that had happened by the time Europeans arrived, that the Americans, Native Americans, had done quite a bit of informal breeding by selecting the plants that did the best in their area and that had the most seeds on them so that they'd have seed to plant back, but also seed to eat. And the great thing about corn and really all grains is how storable the food is. You can harvest it, and once it's dry enough, you can have food for a long time in the pantry.
How has the summer been for the corn crop? We've had an incredibly weird weather year.
Yeah, I actually spent 4 weeks away from Missouri and just got back a week ago today. So I'm a little bit out of touch. But from what I've spoken with people about, it was extremely wet through May and June. And one of the outcomes of that was we had a lot of corn that drowned early on.
Oh, no. Was that the sweet corn that tastes so good? Please say it's not.
Well, I am sure that some of the sweet corn drowned, as I work with field corn as a very regular matter and do not work with field corn, sweet corn much, and the people who grow that. But I'm sure that within the Midwest, a lot of sweet corn drowned, as did a lot of field corn. But the value of sweet corn is high enough that people are for sure going to replant those fields that may have drowned or areas that may have drowned. And even field corn, which has a much lower value per acre, quite a lot of that got replanted after it was so wet. The corn standing in puddles will live if the puddle lasts for a day or 2 days. But by the time you get up to 5 or 6 or 8 days or 4 days, two times, you can actually drown those plants. And so it was a very tough spring for corn plants and really for farmers who had a hard time finding days when they could drive equipment in their fields.
Yeah, and it's also not been such a hot August. I mean, right now we are not being scorched. I don't know whether that August heat is a crucial part of the process or if the plants can just do without that.
It is important for corn. Corn is probably more sensitive to heat than most of our other summer crops. And in particular, it's sensitive to night temperatures. So if it's hot during the day, it usually can handle that pretty well. But at night, when it's not catching any energy from the sun, it's using up a lot more of its stored energy on a hot night than it is on a cool night. And that energy is sugar, and therefore it's not available to go into those kernels.
Oh.
So cooler nights are much better for corn.
Okay. Well, that seems good. Is corn hard to grow?
No, corn is remarkably easy to grow. If you're going to grow sweet corn in your garden, you have to watch out for the fact that there are going to be earworms in it unless you do something to prevent them. But getting the plant to grow is really very easy. In fact, we did a greenhouse experiment this year with corn and fescue, which is a kind of grass. The fescue is so much harder to manage because the seeds have a much harder coat on them. They don't come up nearly as reliably. They're not as large, so the plants are vulnerable for longer. Corn is really a very easy plant to grow, and that's part of its success in the world in the U.S.
How, when you look at corn as it's growing in the field, what are the signs that it's either healthy or struggling?
Well, because of the extremely wet, cold year this year, the leaves were often very close together. So you'd look and you'd see a leaf coming out, and then another leaf comes out from the stem or the stalk. And those leaves should be 6 or 8 inches apart. And many times this year, they were 2 or 3 or 4 inches apart because the plant hadn't grown very much from the time one leaf emerged till the time the next leaf emerged. And it hadn't because it was cold and wet, and their roots were in such wet soil that they couldn't get enough oxygen. So that's one sign. Another sign is definitely the color of the leaves. The leaves should be dark green, especially by the time the corn is as tall as a person or shoulder high. The leaves should be very dark green, and a small plant doesn't have that dark, and they get darker and darker as the plant grows bigger and bigger. But in a wet year, the plant will be nitrogen deficient. And there's two reasons for that. When there's no oxygen in the root zone, the roots can't take up the nitrogen, even if it's there. But in a really wet year, the nitrogen that's there will be lost. And there's two ways that that happens. I won't try to explain those ways. But when the nitrogen is not there, even once the water is gone and the oxygen is back in the root zone, the plant will be suffering from lack of nitrogen. And the nitrogen is extremely important to make the pigments that catch the sunlight. So when the corn is catching a lot of sunlight, it's dark. When it doesn't have enough pigments, it reflects the light back into the air or into space rather than catching it and making grain from it. So that's where its energy comes from, is by catching that light, which it can then convert into the energy that's in the grain.
And you also have a business helping supply farmers with that nitrogen and make sure they know how much their plants need, right?
Yes. The business actually does not supply any nitrogen, but it helps farmers to identify when they have a problem where the nitrogen that their soil is supplying plus the nitrogen that the fertilizer they applied is not enough for the plant. Most times that's going to be no problem. It's in the wet years that they're going to have some need to make a decision about whether their nitrogen status is okay or not okay. And so that's what we do. We get aerial photos, and you can see from the air the light color of the leaves when they don't have enough nitrogen. And so we can identify how bad the problem is and how much fertilizer they need to fix it and how much money they'll lose if they don't do anything, all from these aerial photographs.
There's a process during the corn harvest called detasseling. I think there are entire generations of small-town Midwesterners who had summer jobs detasseling corn. Can you explain what that is?
Sure. That's actually more halfway through the year, but the 4th of July is going to be the peak tasseling period. A tassel is a thing that comes out at the very top of the plant after the last leaf is formed. The next thing that comes out is the tassel, and it looks like a little Christmas tree, maybe 6 or 8 inches tall. And at first it looks kind of like a folded up Christmas tree. Sometimes you see them on the lot where somebody's wrapped them so tight that all the branches are really wrapped against the trunk, and then you cut those, the netting or whatever's on it, and it kind of spreads out. The tassel is like that. It comes out in a tight spike, and then it's the branches spread out, and then little tiny sacks of pollen drop out of there and hang from the branches of the tassel. And that pollen is what fertilizes the seeds. So when they're making hybrid corn, they have a defined female parent and a defined male parent, and they don't want the pollen. It's a female parent and a male parent, but that's human-induced. All corn plants are both female and male, so they have the ear, which is the female part, and they have the tassel with the pollen, which is the male part. So in order to have not have that plant fertilize itself, but have the other parent that's desired, which makes the ensuing seed much more vigorous, they cut all the tassels off the female parent where the seeds will be harvested. And that's going to be in the middle of the summer, and all of my siblings did it. I didn't do it. I was the smartest one in the family.
You're the one who went into corn, and you're the only one who didn't detassel corn.
That is correct.
Do you enjoy eating corn?
I love eating corn.
What's your favorite way to eat it? Are you an on-the-cob guy or what?
I like on-the-cob. I like roasted corn. We just got back from a long trip where we camped a fair amount, and so we cooked corn on fires several times, just wood fires, while camping. I love corn fritters. I like Mexican food. One of my, really favorite easy meals is quesadillas made with corn tortillas.
So you don't limit yourself.
No, I eat corn in probably just about any form that it's available in, including the pork chops.
Well, Peter Scarf, thanks for joining us from the University of Missouri's Plant Sciences program. We appreciate your time.
You're very welcome.
And how does all this science get translated to your plate? Preparations of corn in the kitchen can range from the simple method of wrapping it in aluminum foil and tossing it on the grill to more complex possibilities. In Kansas City's Crossroads District, a local chef has a recipe that takes advantage of the subtle sweetness of freshly picked corn, but with a scientific spin. Sylvia Maria Gross has the story.
Martin Heuser grew up in Bonn, Germany. His parents owned a historic restaurant, like European historic. He's the 8th generation in his family to get into the business. People eat corn in Germany, he says, but it's not a big part of the culinary tradition there. He really came to appreciate the ingredient when he did a stint in Canada.
Corn is for me bright yellow, like the sunshine. It is sweet. It just changes your food. It adds another component and flavor to it, taste to it. And for me, corn is summertime.
Martin is the owner and head chef of Afera, a contemporary German restaurant on Main and 19th Streets. When you walk in, the dining area is minimally decorated with sleek lines and bright pops of color. Behind that is a small, orderly kitchen where Martin shows me how he turns ears of corn into a 21st century dessert.
The dessert is called blueberries and corn. We are making a corn sponge cake, which is a very modern preparation. we're having a blueberry mousse, a blueberry compote, and a cornmeal crumble. And in order to do the cornmeal sponge cake, we need to make a corn milk.
That's where the chopping comes in. After chopping the kernels off and putting them aside, Martin chops the cob into pieces.
A little bit more than a cup of milk.
And drops them with some milk into a pan on the stove.
So yeah, we cook this soft and then we add the kernels and cook them very, very soft as well. And then it goes into the blender and we make a puree. Get it all nicely mashed up.
Martin strains any seeds or hard shells out of the blended corn milk.
Corn milk, you see already how much it changed in color. It thickened up a little bit from the starch. And also it sweetened my milk already.
The milk is the base of a batter, which he whisks up. And now it gets molecular.
Now the mixture, and this is a new way of baking pastries, is going into a spuma bottle with some nitrogen charges, and we're charging it with three capsules.
The spuma bottle is basically a fancy whipped cream dispenser, and the baking pan is a cardboard coffee cup.
We're taking a to-go cup and punching three holes in the bottom, which is very important for the cooking process. We spray it with a little bit of pan spray, and then we fill the cups like to a little bit less than half.
Now it's into the microwave for 1 minute and 15 seconds, and that's the entire baking time. That's right, in a microwave.
So it's going to be ready in like 3 seconds.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so now we have to wait a little bit to steam it out.
When the yellow cake emerges from the cup, it looks like a delicate sea sponge with big gaping holes, but lighter and softer. Martin pulls it into four pieces.
The blueberry mousse, it's whipped cream. So then we just put the blueberry compote, which we cooked in red wine and port wine and sugar. And this is just screaming summertime. Here we have a cornmeal crumbs. And now we're going to finish our dessert with homemade basil and blueberry sorbet.
The corn sponge cake is a subtle sweet that contrasts with the intensity of the blueberries. The final dish is a spectrum of blue, from the light purpley mousse to the dark sorbet. And one forkful is a mix of textures, spongy, silky, icy, and crunchy. It's a delicious way to partake of our humble and ubiquitous corn.
I make that at home all the time. Just kidding. Thanks to Sylvia Maria Gross for that dispatch. Martin Heuser shared his technique for making blueberries and corn dessert at the restaurant Afera. He says the dessert will stay on the menu as long as corn is in season through September, and we'll have the recipe on our website later today. So check that out if you want to try it at home. Corn's not the only thing in season. There's a veritable bounty right now. When Central Standard returns, the food critics will explore the best of this season's produce. Fresh tomatoes, peaches, zucchini, and beets. How are they being used in restaurant kitchens and yours? 816-235-2888. Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman, and now the food critics are here. We're talking about great interpretations of this season's freshest local produce on restaurant menus. How they're being used in restaurant kitchens. Charles Frouza of The Pitch, good morning.
Good morning.
And Jenny Vergara of Feast Magazine, thanks for joining us.
Absolutely.
Jill Silva of the Kansas City Star, great to see you.
Great to see you. Thanks for having me.
This is a crisp, cool August we're having. Is that affecting what's in season right now?
Well, you know, I think it's only been crisp and cool the last couple of days. We've actually had a kind of a nice steamy August, and I've really noticed that, you know, all of a sudden we do have kind of the sweet tomatoes and sweeter watermelons now coming. But yeah, I mean, I'll take what we've got right now for sure, and weather-wise.
So what ingredients are being celebrated on menus featuring local seasonal foods?
Peaches.
Oh, yeah. Tomatoes for sure.
Tomatoes, yeah. Tomatoes.
Corn, green beans.
Well, we have been talking about corn, so let's start there. But first, I want to say, call 816-235-2888 to tell us about the end of the summer produce you can hardly wait for. What do you do with it? And is there a dish on a restaurant menu that knocks it out of the park? We need to know about it. 816-235-2888 is the number to call. So corn, let's start there. Jill Silva, tell me about the Mexican street corn at Sheridan's Unforked.
Oh, this is really a wonderful find, I think. It's just roasted corn on a stick, and then it's slathered in butter and a little bit of herbs and a little bit of the Mexican sort of Parmesan-type cheese. And it's so delicious. It was so sweet, so delicious. I went through the drive-thru, interestingly, at Unforked, and they can wrap it up like a little burrito in foil. So you can take it to go. There were a lot of other corn dishes on the menu, which surprised me. There was a corn salad, and there was also a gazpacho with some nice corn in there. So great seasonal stuff. You can get it plain or off the cob.
And that's at Sheridan's Unforked at 119th and Metcalf?
It is, yeah. It's a little quick casual restaurant.
What about Charbar's Succotash Side?
Oh, that's kind of a year-round for them, and it's really wonderful. They put edamame in that particular mix, which is different than
instead of lima beans.
Lima beans, yeah, which I really appreciate because lima beans can get a little starchy for me.
A little? Oh, my God.
That's like the one food that I think I'd just step away from.
Yeah, I mean, no
to lima beans. Sorry.
Just backing away slowly.
But you can't, yeah, you can't say that to chefs, though, because they love them.
Oh, I'll eat them if a chef makes me.
If a chef ties your hands behind your back. But tell me more about those, the Charbar Succotash Side.
Well, I had it with, they have a lot of vegetarian things, so this is an excellent side with meat or with some of their other smoked vegetarian items. Jackfruit's a big one, which is very interesting. So it's just a really colorful and pretty and very delicious salad. I know a lot of people don't really like succotash, but I think this one is very well done. And it's just, it makes you feel like you're having your veggies if you're eating big hunks of meat.
This is at the Charbar. Do any of our other critics think about succotash that they like in town? Or is that even an item you would order?
You know, I my mother would make canned succotash for us as kids. And I think that's where I lost my taste for it. You know, right up there with lima beans.
We've already discussed my lima bean problem, so I can't really confess to adoring
succotash. Can I throw something out, which I should have put on my list and I didn't? Has anyone here ever been to the 63rd Street flea market? Oh, you know, where the old 63rd Street drive-in used to be?
Oh, yeah.
They have quite a few food vendors, and a lot of them I am assuming, Mexican. The food there is actually delicious, but when I go there about this time of year, and I haven't been there yet this year, but they serve grilled corn on the cob, but they sprinkle some kind of spicy mixture on mm-hmm. it. And at first I didn't think I would like it, but that little bit of fire really brings out the sweetness of the corn.
Well, we were just discussing, actually, you know, elote is very common. You can find it. I have a brother that lives in Texas. It's on every street corner there. And elote is either corn on the cob or off the cob. And then it's usually mixed in some sort of styrofoam cup with butter and maybe some sour cream or fresh herbs, cilantro, and then usually some sort of spice powder, like it's a chili spice, typically. And it's delicious. I mean, it's just, it's lovely and rich, but we don't have that. I mean, if anybody, you know, it's kind of one of those things where is our elote?
Well, you can make it at home very easily and experiment with your spice mixtures.
That's a good point.
So that's a starting point. Mm-hmm.
Well, Jill, you know, you also note a few places that have corn as either a topping for a burger or a side dish accompanying meat. Tell us about those.
I had a fantastic pizza earlier this season, and I'm not sure that it's really still on the menu, but Limestone Pizza in Lawrence had a wonderful pizza with creamed corn, fresh kernels of corn, cherry tomatoes, cheddar cheese, and parsley, and it was quite delicious. I thought it was just tasted like summer to me. I just enjoyed it so much. And then I ran into at the food truck event in Miriam on Sundays a burger that Beauty of the Bistro does fantastic burgers, just wonderful burgers.
And that's a food truck?
It's a food truck. And so I walked up to the window and the owner said, you've got to try this one. And sure enough, she had a corn relish on it. And, you know, just really, you think about grilling outdoors and you think about eating corn on the cob. And it's like, what a natural, clever way to incorporate corn into a really unexpected summer food.
So that's the Beauty and the Bistro food truck.
Beauty of the Bistro.
Beauty of the Bistro. Charles, you're recommending a corn dish at Jack Stack. We don't usually think of barbecue places as destinations for fresh seasonal produce, but go on.
Well, I'm one of those people that I like food that's not very good for me, as my body can attest to. And I do love the cheesy corn bake at Jack Stack. For some reason...
Oh, who doesn't love that?
I just I feel guilty. And yes. I really consider it to be a fall dish, you know?
And I'm sure it's warm. Describe it.
Well, I don't know if it's canned or fresh corn. I don't know, and I don't care. I'm assuming because it has a slight crunch, it's probably not canned. It's cheese, cream, and corn, I think. I've never tried to make it.
It's almost like a souffle, kind of like a, I wonder about like if there's eggs in it. I don't know the recipe for sure, so we'd just be guessing at this point. But it's got a lightness to it, but it is rich, and it is
very
delicious.
Rich,
and it's a side dish?
Mm-hmm.
What do you recommend getting it with?
Barbecue.
Barbecue anything?
And barbecue anything.
Okay. So that's at Jack Stack, and it's the
the cheesy corn bake.
Cheesy corn bake.
And you know... Corn is a good side, I think, for barbecue because the sweetness of the corn and the blandness of it are a good balance for the spiciness of a barbecue.
Mm-hmm. Well, and cheese has saved many a vegetable for many children across the country, for sure.
You are so right.
And throughout the ages.
Yes, yes.
Jenny Vergara, tell me about the chilled sweet corn soup at Novel. And please describe this in a lot of detail because I'm fanatical about corn soup and I'm going to experience this vicariously now.
Well, you know, I think Ryan Brazil is one of our excellent fine dining chefs that we have in this town that really does do a great job with vegetable dishes. And I don't know if he would love me saying that because he also obviously does some phenomenal protein dishes as well. But his sides are all mostly vegetable based and I just love them. And this to me feels like just the perfect summer starter. It's very creamy. It's obviously pureed in some way, shape or form. And it's just super creamy and fine. And then it's got just a little bit of lump crab meat that just kind of decorates the top of it. The crab meat is almost just a footnote to really this really sweet, really fresh, creamy, chilled corn. And it's just like the perfect summer starter for me. So like I said, my hat's off to Ryan. I think he does a great job with vegetables for sure.
Well, we want to know who you think does a great job with vegetables, especially local seasonal vegetables, at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. And we're also interested in what you do with them. What's growing in your garden? What are you picking up at the farmer's market? And how do you like to enjoy those things in your own kitchen? Jenny, you also... wanted to recommend a few things at Cleaver and Cork. Start off by telling us about the heirloom tomato and corn salad. I think everyone here recommended it.
Yeah. So, I think that might be the salad of the summer for me, for sure. Cleaver and Cork is obviously Alex Pope's place down in the Power and Light. And this particular dish is a summer dish only, and it's got a little bit of corn in the base of it, a lot of varying sizes, smaller kind of cherry tomatoes that are heirlooms. So you've got some purples, some yellows, some orange, some red. It's a very colorful salad, tomato salad. It's got some fresh feta, and then they do like this caramelized lemon crisp, for lack of a better word, but it's basically thinly sliced lemons that they have either dehydrated or caramelized in some fashion. It's got a little bit of char to it that they just kind of decorate the top with, and they're delicious. They add just that right little bit of citrus, and I love citrus, so I'm all about that salad.
Do you guys, other critics, want to weigh in on this? Everyone here has, when asked about just local seasonal vegetables, this salad at this restaurant came up for all of you.
It really surprised me when I had it. And I think what surprised me most was it's really billed as an heirloom tomato salad. And then you sort of see corn. And it's not an afterthought. They're very equal. I love the feta. Might have you know, the acidic tang of that lemon that Jenny was talking about, that just like combines that saltiness, that freshness, and then that lemon acid bright tone. Just really a nice salad. I was super surprised because I was not visualizing, you know, a fair amount of corn in that salad.
There are some other seasonal specialties there that Jenny Vergara, you wanted to point out, and then we'll jump over to a caller.
You bet. So I actually had this in conjunction with the heirloom tomato salad, and it's basically their fried green beans, but they pickle the green beans and then fry them. And I am such a fan of dill in terms of kind of fresh herbs, and the dill in the pickling process really comes through. So it's a traditional kind of fried green bean. Many of us have had them in more casual dining restaurants, which Cleaver & Quirk certainly would qualify. But this particular dish, because they pickled the bean before they fried it, really added just a lovely, tangy, kind of fresh, bright green. I just loved it. Absolutely loved it.
And this is at Cleaver & Quirk.
Yes, Cleaver & Quirk in the Power and Light.
And there was something new at La Bodega that you wanted to note, right?
Yeah, let's see. Which one was at La Bodega? Yes, sorry. So they've got a new gin tonic menu. A lot of the Spanish restaurants in town are starting to roll out these you know, really fresh gin tonics that have herbs and seasonal ingredients that kind of pair with the gin. But aside from that, they also have a green bean salad that's a new menu item. And I think they change it up seasonally. But again, it's very similar to the tomato in that it's just a simple vinaigrette. It's got a little bit of green olive that gives it that kind of briny saltiness to it, and pepidou peppers, tomato, basil. It's just really light, really tangy, really refreshing. And especially if you're getting some of the more fried or heavier items, it's like the perfect thing to cut through all of that.
And that's at La Bodega.
La Bodega.
We're hearing from some of our listeners. Anne wanted to recommend alote, the corn dish we were talking about earlier. She says it's on the menu at Dos de Zorros Taqueria at Blue Ridge and Holmes. Has anyone tried that?
I like that restaurant. I've not tried it there, but I might go tonight.
Yeah. To try the alote?
Yeah.
And Renee says that the Overland Park Farmers Market has a vendor, a vendor that roasts corn and puts different toppings on it. And there's another vendor there that has a wiener wagon and serves corn chutney. Has anyone tried either of these things at the Overland Park Farmers Market? No,
I think a hot dog with corn chutney would be really good.
It does sound good. And I'm surprised I've missed this because I go to the market fairly often. I guess I get stuck on my favorites and don't explore enough. But yeah, that just sounds wonderful.
We're also hearing from Twitter that Pizzeria Locale has an excellent corn and ham pizza.
Oh, yeah. I did see that on the menu. I haven't had it yet. I've seen a couple of pictures of it. It looks quite good. It's very interesting.
It's so Midwestern sounding. It sounds good.
You know, it's really interesting. To me, it reads a lot more European than maybe what it sounds. But the flavor profile's got to be delicious.
Charles, what's your favorite summer ingredient?
My favorite? Well, tomatoes. Very, you know, obviously. This is a good time for tomatoes. And can I say that the best tomato dish I've had, and I think Jill feels the same way, is the BLT at Cleaver & Quirk, which is that new restaurant in Power & Light. And it's made with a fried green tomato instead of the traditional red cold one. And that bit of crunch just, and the bacon, I swear, is almost an inch thick.
Oh, the bacon is just
outrageous. So it's a great BLT.
And that's at Cleaver & Quirk.
Correct.
So I have to admit, I am not much of a bacon person, and I know that's heresy to a lot of people, though not to my Jewish family. but with the BLT, I think that like the L and the T bring out the best in the B and vice versa. What are some other great BLTs?
There's a very nice one that pops up on the menu every so often at the Sundry.
And that's in the Crossroads?
Right, on Baltimore. And I think they serve it once a week, if I recall, and I can't remember which day of the week, but they use some beautiful, I think, burger bacon, which is nicely spiced, and then they've got, it's just really simple, you know, a beautiful piece of lettuce and a nice wedge of tomato on a kind of a fluffy sort of ciabatta-like bun, and it's just really a nice rendition, simple, you know, not trying to get a little over. You know, the one at Cleaver and Cork is really delicious. It's a little more elaborate, a little bit more fancy.
Am I right in that instead of lettuce, do they use arugula instead of lettuce?
Yeah, I think they get that peppery bite in there, yeah. So, you know, that's very gourmet to me, that particular one. And this one's much simpler, but very well executed. And we're going to have a feature on Wednesday about BLTs all across town. So take a look at
that. Is the peanut still famous for?
Peanut is still famous for that. Yes. And that's one of the ones mentioned along with probably half a dozen others that we checked out around town.
And Jill, when you said you'd have a feature, that's in the Kansas City Star.
Yes. In the Chowtown section on Wednesdays.
We don't talk that much on this show about Walt Bodine, the veteran broadcaster who used to host this hour. But I have to say, this time of year, he would be insisting that we talk about watermelon. So is anyone seeing watermelon on a local menu?
A watermelon ice cream, or I'm sorry, sorbet over at Christopher Elbow's. I had it earlier
Sounds
this
wonderful,
week.
Isn't it?
Oh, so, so wonderful. Along with sweet corn ice cream as well. So I had the two together, and I felt like if I had a tomato, this would be, and maybe a peach, that would be summer right there in a little ice cream dish.
Yeah.
Jenny, you have noticed that the West Side Local has a salad with a watermelon vinaigrette.
Yeah, and I love watermelon. In fact, I start trying to eat them in June and don't really get a really awesome one until just about now. So I think I always joke on social media about that. I get that one watermelon a year that's just phenomenal and just exactly like I remember how good it is. And I think I've already had mine this year. But they do, so it's an arugula salad, so a little bit of a spicy kind of green. You get that little peppery kick to it. But the sweetness of the watermelon vinaigrette, and then it's a grilled and chilled asparagus that's on it, feta cheese. I must have a thing for feta. Everything I'm recommending today has feta on it, apparently.
Feta goes nicely with a lot of those summer produce items.
Yeah, fresh and chilled. So,
Well, speaking of that, maybe I'll wait.
Yeah, well, we come right back to it, Charles, because Central Standard's headed to a break. There's still just a little time to share your recommendations for menus featuring local seasonal produce. It's a great time of year for vegetable lovers. So, veggie people, now's your time. Call us up, 816-235-2888. I'm Gina Kaufman. We'll be right back. You're listening to Central Standard. This is a food critics show. I'm Gina Kaufman, joined by Charles Ferruza, Jill Silva, and Jenny Vergara. And we are celebrating those waning days of summer, the ones that are here right now, with a vegetable seasonal produce show. So many delicious things are hitting our plates fresh from the farms and gardens. What's got you excited, and how are local chefs making the most of it? 816-235-2888. We were just talking as we went off to break about watermelon, and Charles, there is an item you have been missing on menus.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if the trend has cycled out, but I really enjoy that combination of salty feta cheese and sweet watermelon in a salad, just the two of them and maybe some nice vinaigrette, and I haven't seen it on a menu all summer.
Yeah, I haven't either. I haven't either, and I don't know if that's just the function of the fact that we just now have sweet enough watermelon to do it. But
maybe that is it. I don't know.
And normally there's some mint or basil somewhere in the mix.
It's a good...
Mm-hmm. And a balsamic glaze with it just ties it all together. We have a recipe coming out in the Star soon with that. So I've been doing it all summer long at home, but you're right, I haven't seen it on any menus.
So an easy thing for home cooks who want to
super
make a
easy
summery dish.
Chop it up and put it all together.
Let's talk to Nick in Independence. Hi, Nick.
Hello.
What can you share with us?
Well, since you were talking about BLTs earlier, I wanted to mention a restaurant in Independence called Vivalore that does an amazing BLT. So wheat toast. They also add avocado to it, and it has like a spicy chipotle aioli on it as well. That restaurant's locally owned, so all the vegetables that they get, and even most of the meat, is all local. It's all local sourced, and it's just one of the hidden gems in Independence that like nobody knows about. And I just wanted to mention it.
So it's called Vivalore.
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 Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's also its patio's a quad, so there's four buildings involved, and it's essentially their patio looks like a hanging garden. So it's like for them, summertime is like their busy time because everyone wants to go out there and wants to sit on this like a beautiful, beautiful patio. The restaurant itself is an art museum. It's three stories, and all the local artists come in and do consignment there. And so there's just amazing selection of things that you can do there. It's a really interesting place.
Thanks a lot, Nick. Has anyone been to Vivalore?
I've been to Vivalore.
I have too. Yeah. It's gorgeous.
I'm wondering if that sandwich is only on the lunch menu, though, because the dinner menu is kind of hoity-toity.
Yeah, you know, it kind of has its own following, its own little crowd, I noticed when I was there. It seemed like a lot of locals, and I have been for dinner and for lunch, and it's just a really cute, cool little, he's right, hidden gem.
Jenny, talk to me about gazpacho. You've got a couple of different styles of gazpacho on your list.
You bet. So there's a melon gazpacho that I'm kind of obsessed with right now at room 39. So I'm a recent transplant to Midtown. I was living in the West Side for years. And so now I'm re-exploring kind of 39th Street in a brand new way. And they have a melon gazpacho with chili powder. And so it's kind of that sweet corn with the chili elote kind of conversation we were having earlier. But I think it's a blend of melons. I think there's some watermelon. I think there's some cantaloupe and honeydew and whatever else I'm sure they can get. But very smooth, very creamy. And then that just little kick of chili pepper. Just love that. And they now, of course, have two locations. And I'm pretty sure it's on both menus. The other place is Republica, the new Spanish tapas place that Bread and Butter Concepts has opened up on the Country Club Plaza. And they're doing a tricolored tomato gazpacho, which is, I suspect it has, you know, each one has, it's basically three different cups and they serve a yellow, a green, and a red. And like the red has tomatoes and red pepper and onions, and the green has, you know, green peppers and green chilies and green tomatoes.
Do they taste distinctly different?
They really
do.
They've used herbs in a very just very smart way to make each of those kind of taste unique and different.
Charles, you love an heirloom tomato salad at Jasper's.
Well,
and I'm leaving out an important ingredient.
Yes,
there.
I had a friend. It's the theater dish. I can't be the only one you have it on your list too, Jenny. I think. Where it's handmade mozzarella that they make at the table.
Yes.
And it's sort of a theatrical process. And Jasper Mirabile Jr., who's the chef there, also serves it with very, very fresh heirloom tomatoes. And it's a beautiful salad.
Well, I just think I'm so into tableside. I think just the whole theater of restaurant right now, that's really appealing to me. And so I love the fact that it's tableside. And just fresh. I mean, it doesn't get any better than fresh mozzarella.
Fresh mozzarella, fresh tomatoes. That sounds really good. So that's at Jasper's.
Yeah. The problem with that is that's a dish that I eat with lots of bread. So you know, it's fattening for me.
Bread isn't a problem. Come on. Let's talk to Aaron in Olathe. Hi, Aaron.
Hi. How are you?
Good. What can you share with us?
Well, I was listening to you all talk about the watermelon salad, and somebody had mentioned the gazpacho earlier at Unforked. And I don't know if they still have it, but earlier this summer, they did have a watermelon salad, and it had some savory elements to it as well. And I thought it looked really good, and I thought it was worth mentioning since you all had talked about that. The other thing I was going to bring up is I live in Olathe, and every year we have this Old Settlers Fair. I think it's been going on for 100 years or something. And, you know, they have your typical carnival-type fried food typically, but last year somebody did a booth with the Mexican street corn. It was like slathered in mayonnaise and had the Mexican cheese on it and like some chili pepper and that kind of thing. And I like took a beeline for it, and it was so good. It was such a kind of a fun alternative to fair food.
And that happens over Labor Day weekend?
It's the weekend after Labor Day.
Oh, okay. So if someone wants to get corn slathered in mayo
with cheese and spices, yeah. And it was every bit as good as I had hoped it would be.
Thanks, Aaron.
Absolutely.
What about, I mean, corn is kind of a fair food in some ways.
Very much so, I think.
Oh, I think that's the perfect place to find it. I wouldn't have even thought of that, but yeah.
Let's talk to Caesar in North Kansas City. Hi, Caesar.
Hi, how's it going?
Good, how about you?
Pretty good. Well, I was listening about the corn conversation that got me interested in calling. First time calling, and I'm from Guatemala, you know, and actually we're fortunate to have corn like all year long, so we use it a lot. And I heard about the esquite and the elote, they call it. That's what they call it in some parts of Mexico, and that's what it is. It's just corn, ketchup, mayonnaise, and Valentina. There's a spicy sauce that they sell in Mexico, and that's what the flavor of spices you feel. It's a pretty good sauce. It's one of my favorites. And, yeah, corn, some people just cook it and put ketchup, mayonnaise, and some kind of queso seco. It's kind of like a type of feta cheese. You just sprinkle it on top, and it's a pretty popular dish in fairs or street vendors, too.
And so do you make that at home in Kansas City, or do you go out and get it somewhere?
No, I have to do it at home. I haven't found here in North Kansas City. I moved here from North Carolina, and it was pretty popular over there in, like, flea markets and stuff like that. But right here, I'm surprised. My daughter loved it. My wife didn't like it so much at the beginning because ketchup and mayonnaise and corn, but now she likes it. So
an acquired taste for some.
Yeah, you have to grow with it, but it's pretty good.
Thanks, Caesar. Thanks for calling.
Hey, have a great day.
You too.
Thanks for the show. I enjoy it every Friday.
Oh, good. Thank you.
Okay.
We have also a tweet from Lydia who says that local pig has a watermelon, corn, kale, and feta salad.
Mm.
That sounds very tempting. Well, you know, produce does not have to come in a salad or as a healthy vegetable side dish. There are ice creams and other desserts starting to incorporate produce. Does anything make your lists from the dessert section of the menu?
I have one.
Yeah, it sounds really good, too.
Oh, my gosh. Well, you guys remember Zinn, right, down on Main? So, basically, the chef, Derek Nancy, who owns Boulevard Tavern, he and his lovely wife, Megan, he used to be the chef at Zinn, and he was responsible for making the basil ice cream, which was basically served on their strawberry shortcake, which was one of their desserts that they served at Zinn, very popular dessert. And he was the man with the recipe, so he now is serving a variety of ice creams in his restaurant for dessert.
All made there.
All made there. And his wife came over and said, yeah, he's doing the basil ice cream this week. You should definitely get that. Oh, my gosh. I got two scoops. And, I mean, if I could wear basil perfume, if I could lick that bowl. Yeah. If I could have licked that bowl, I sure would have and not been too embarrassed. But that is just phenomenal ice cream. And it's creamy. It's not like a sorbet. It's not icy with chunks of herbs. It's very creamy. But that basil is just, and bright green.
So where do people go for it now?
Boulevard Tavern. So it's right there on Southwest Boulevard, and it was in the old space that had, oh, what was the name of that? I'm not going to remember.
Nika's, wasn't
it? Nika's, yeah. Thank you. Nika's 320.
And I am having a hard time in my dotage being able to eat ice cream anymore. And Ixtapa, north of the river, the Mexican restaurant Ixtapa, used to serve a ice cream made from corn milk instead of dairy milk.
Right. They still do.
They still do? Uh-huh. Okay, good, because it was wonderful, and it was wonderful to be able to have a chance to eat ice cream again.
So you're recommending the corn ice cream?
Well, it's made with corn milk. It was actually chocolate ice cream, and it was wonderful.
No dairy in that?
No.
At all?
No, none at all.
Okay, wow, that's interesting.
It was and really, really good. Very creamy.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of soups and sauces that are kind of clarified and made that way with just the corn, you know. Even the corn cobs, you just boil up the corn cobs and use that as corn milk. They might do theirs a little differently, but that sounds delicious.
We haven't said much about peaches.
Oh, yeah. So I have a good one for peaches. Favare Bread over on the west side. They have a Cheese Slipper Saturday, basically, during the summer between kind of Memorial Day and Labor Day. And they do different ones every single Saturday. You have to get there early. Doors open at 6.
So explain what a cheese slipper is in case someone hasn't tried that.
You bet. So basically, it's a really soft, lovely, kind of almost like a pizza crust, but not crunchy. I mean, it's really doughy and beautiful, almost like ciabatta bread. It's just delicious. And then they top it with seasonal things they get at the farmer's market. And they've brought in local chefs. Last weekend was, I think, Patrick Ryan from Port Fonda, the chef from Port Fonda, and that line was around the block. So like I said, it's only on Saturday evenings. You have to get there early. Doors open at 6. You have to be there probably about 5:15 and get in line, basically. But they have one that I just love, and it's peach with sweet corn anglaise, ricotta, and Thai basil. And all of that hits my buttons just boom, 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 straight down the line.
So and any other favorites so far this season?
You know, and then just the basic. They do an heirloom tomato one every year that has just fresh basil on it that I just love. So Cheese Slipper Saturday is always a part of my summer. A trip to Murray's and a trip to Favare Bread for Cheese Slipper Saturday.
That's all the time we have for today's Central Standard. Our food critics list of corny foods and seasonal produce will be online later today for easy reference. Look for it at kcur.org. Charles Frusa of The Pitch, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Gina.
Jill Silva of the Kansas City Star, it's been fun. Thanks very much, Gina.
And Feast Magazine's Jenny Vergara, great recommendations this morning.
Thank you so much.
Listen back to this discussion and share it with your friends by going to kcur.org/centralstandard later today and sign up for our podcast while you're there. Monday, UMKC is adding a zine archive to its special collections. So if you love zines, tune in. And if you don't know what a zine is, tune in. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross with Fridays, like today, by Jen Chen. We get lots of help from Andrea Tudhope. Linda Scher runs the board for us every day. Our theme music is by Spoonbender Labs right here in Kansas City. And don't forget, we'll have a recipe for you online later today as well. I'm Gina Kaufman. Have a great weekend, everyone.
You've been listening to Central Standard on KCUR, KCUR HD1, Kansas City Public Media. I'm Linda Scher. Stay with us for Up to Date, coming up next. Later today on Science Friday, a new play asks, is it ever ethical to decipher someone's genome without permission? Plus a look at urine as fertilizer for your garden. And we hear ideas for new planet names. That's coming up on Science Friday from 2 to 4 on KCUR. KCUR is supported by Lyric Opera of Kansas City, whose upcoming season features new classic and unexpected productions of Mozart's Don Giovanni, Dvorak's Rusalka, Donizetti's The Elixir of Love, and Bizet's Carmen. Tickets are online at